Great. Thank you very much. And thank you, Matt, for that introduction and also just for the whole invite to be here. I don't actually speak about myself or Just Giving very often. We sort of like to let our actions and our service speak for themselves, I suppose. I, for various reasons, won't keep you for too long today, partly because our wives get on so well. They're in town and Matt's credit card is probably twitching, so the longer I speak, the more they're going to spend. Now, also, a Brighton crowd, so I better get a confession out the way. I know that's probably a bit more of a Catholic thing, but a confession out the way, and that is that I did live in Bournemouth for a while, so come on, let's have it. Let's get it out of the way. Out the system. Okay, we good? We friends now? We good? I did leave. I don't live there anymore. I think anyone that's going to talk about something like Just Giving, clicker, you know, the story of Just Giving, it's personal. This is my story of Just Giving. It's kind of, I don't know if it's the official version. We keep arguing over what the official version is. And I think the official version makes it sound like we always planned to be where we are now. We didn't. We're just some people. We took it a day at a time. We felt we were doing the right thing. We had a plan in mind. But actually, you know, to sort of be introduced as the creator of, or sometimes, you know, co-founder, it's strange because we feel we're an enabler. You know, the success of Just Giving has surprised us as much as anyone else. You know, we're are we entrepreneurs? Yeah, I guess so, because we took a chance. We didn't get paid much for a very long time. So yeah, risk takers, but doesn't feel like we fit the usual model of entrepreneur. So all of that sort of to try and explain a little bit of background. I'm a technologist, I'm an engineer, so that you can kind of understand where I'm coming from in telling the story. And that there are probably some echoes here of Steve's presentation as well. So in fact, we have exactly the same slide at one point. So I'll not linger on it because you've heard someone tell it far better than I can. But one thought I did have that I thought I'd share is we certainly don't have the resources of some of the clients that you were showing, and you were right to sort of point out that, you know, some people here might also not have those kind of resources. So one trick we have is we have a device which is a large polystyrene G, because we tend to emphasize the G in the middle of Just Giving because it's the giving bit that's important. And we use that in lots of, you know, all the photos and things that we take, and it just, you know, it's just an anchor point, and it's a useful, you know, it's a cheap thing that we did that helps us use social media, hopefully well, but I'm sure you could teach us a few things. I'll find you later. Yeah, Matt mentioned Just Giving being topical. I said that I don't normally speak about Just Giving very often. Partly the reason why I am today is because of the context of this event, and that is this debate about whether business is at odds with sort of society. A lot of people point at the Companies Act, which talks about businesses having a fiduciary responsibility to shareholders, and that's their overriding sort of reason for existing. Yeah, okay, there's a law that says something along those lines. I don't know if there's a lawyer in the room. It's probably close, but not completely accurate. Actually, we see the money that flows through Just Giving and flows through us as a business as just sort of the lifeblood of the business, but it's not the reason for living. So it helps us do what we do, but it's not the reason why we do it. So so I'm here to talk about how, you know, hopefully Just Giving is doing, or at least hopefully you'll see that Just Giving are doing interesting and good things, but there are those that don't agree. And they might be in the room today. I don't know if there's any questions coming through about that, but happy to talk about it and about, you know, our fees. Shocker, we have fees. But we work in the charity space, so you know, it can be controversial. But let's go. Right, picture of the Royal Albert Hall. Why? Every minute we have this many people passing through our site, and that's not peak. That's on average every minute and every day. And when you're sat in our office, you forget that. You sort of, you know, I can see 130 people in our office at the moment. Mostly busy, we keep an eye on that, but you need to remember there's every minute there's that many people coming, and you know they're hanging around for 3 or 4 minutes doing what they need to do on the website, sometimes longer if they're creating a fundraising page. But that's very humbling, you know, to think that's who we're serving. An unlikely pairing. Does anyone know who this is on the left? Close. It's Nobel, Alfred Nobel. Anyone know who this is on the right? liars. Katie Price, aka Jordan. So I said this is my story. This is where Just Giving started for me. really. I went to, I was in a dot-com business. We were lucky enough to have sold it, but as one of my last commitments to that company was I attended an event at the Royal Albert Hall. I'm not obsessed with the Royal Albert Hall, honestly, but and sat to my left was not Alfred Nobel, but was a lady from Médecins Sans Frontières, and they had just that year won the Nobel Peace Prize. And this lady, Anne-Marie, she's now one of my colleagues, one of the co-founders of Just Giving, and she was managing director of Médecins Sans Frontières UK at the time. So on my right was sat this lady over here, Katie Price, although at the time everyone knew her as Jordan. Let's just say that the conversation to my right lasted about 10 minutes before it was getting a little dry. And so I thought I'd better talk to this lady to my left. And we just mused on the fact that 1999, I'm talking about, we're going way back, and this is where the story gets a bit of a sort of chronology. This was voted the best looking website of 1999. takes you back. 0% penetration in broadband in the UK. Most of us were on dial-up, and we were paying by the second. So as soon as that page loaded, out came the modem. Not paying for that anymore. And also, this is what mobile phones looked like in 1999. So we were sort of, you know, I'd been doing a dot-com thing. I was a technologist. This lady knew charity space really well. And we were just sort of reflecting on the fact that what are charities doing with the internet? Even at the time, people were skeptical as to whether the internet would exist in a few years. So really was sort of the Wild West. Next slide. There we go. I've used something called Wayback Machine. I don't know if you know of it. It's a sort of archiving service. It's fantastic. But some of the images do drop out. So top left, this is what the Macmillan Cancer website looked like back in 1999. And there's no ability to make a donation. And behind that Support Us button, which you might think could lead to a donation facility, there was a list of email addresses of the different departments and, you know, you'd contact about various things. And then specifically from the NSPCC website in 1999, I just cut this little bit out, which was the closest it gets to a donation, which is sort of print the form, post it in. So that's what charities looked like in 1999 online. And those are the big ones. Obviously, lots of charities didn't even have a web presence at all. So we just thought, well, you know, what are the barriers to charities being online and taking donations online? And that's sort of the beginnings of Just Giving. We didn't know if it is Just Giving then. In fact, we never thought we'd be a consumer website at all. The first thing we decided to build in around April 2000. So this is just setting the scene to try and remember what was April 2000 like. I'm sure you all bought the Oops, I Did It Again single by Britney Spears. And you're probably still buying it on vinyl at that point. Maybe some of you are on CD already. We're coming off the back of the dot-com boom as well with the spectacular collapse of Boo.com. A couple of other sort of cultural references from Hollywood and Time magazine. We decided that one of the barriers for charities raising money online was just the expense of setting up a donation facility. So we thought we'd give it a go, and it was really hard. It was technically hard, and we had to pound the streets of London trying to find a bank that was willing to let us use their services for credit card, debit card type transactions. Most conversations ended with the bank asking us to put in excess of $1 million on account with them. That's kind of risk money, you know, in case something goes wrong. We didn't have $1 million. So we thought we kept walking. We kept walking. Eventually, thankfully, RBS at the time, they decided to, for the meager sum of $100,000, allow us to use their services. But it worked really well. So we decided, okay, let's create a donate button that charities can put on their own website. We weren't going to create a website. So I started talking to charities with Anne-Marie and another lady called Zareen, one of the other co-founders. She actually was the first employee. We started talking to charities about XML, web services, And then we realized these people don't have websites. They don't know what XML is. They don't know what web services are. So we built Just Giving just as a demonstrator. It was just a place to put a donate button and to say, this is what a website looks like. Here's your charity's name. Press this donate button, and we raised money and passed. And they're like, that's great. We want to put on your website. No, we're selling the button. We're not selling you the website. Eventually, we became convinced that it's the website that the charities wanted to be on. So that's where Just Giving was kind of born from in April 2000. We actually still argue over whether when the company was founded. So that's the official incorporation date of Just Giving. But, you know, we've been talking about it since 1999. These take a while to get off the ground. So, next slide. Just wanted to give a quick sort of shout to... There's about 20 angel investors we found at that time. And I just think it's quite interesting to reflect on, you know, the personalities and why people are motivated to invest. I'm going to mention another shareholder later on. None of these people have ever taken a dividend from Just Giving. They tend to be categorized as philanthropic investors. Gentleman on the left, very interesting. He's the director of the largest brewery in the Ukraine. So, wow, you know, it's very different to my day-to-day workings these days. And this gentleman, he's got a construction software business based in Berkshire. And he spends a lot of his sort of spare time and his own disposable income building schools and hospitals in developing countries. So just really interesting. And you know, maybe in their terms, they didn't invest a lot to get Just Giving off the ground, but it wouldn't have happened without that kind of thinking. So the website was born. Again, I don't actually have the original, or at least I can't lay my hands on the original imagery of the website. But my point I'm making is we went out trying to sell these XML donation button things. Didn't work. So we said, okay, website. Nothing on here is about event fundraising, which is where 90% of the donation throughput comes from these days. So we kept pivoting. So, you know, one of the business messages is just keep trying new things until you find the thing that works. So we organized charities by, you know, the category of cause that we felt that they fell into, until the charities started to game it by claiming to be involved in all of them. Some very interesting conversations about that. So just rolling forward, May 2001, the first Apple store was only just open. I mean, it's amazing how time flies. Everyone's still loving S Club 7, wedding reception favorite. But this is how people were doing event fundraising. Good old forms. BBC Radio Gloucestershire, this one, it's particularly splendid. So we sort of had a look at this, and it was one of about eight sort of wet Wednesday afternoon ideas that we thought, you know, we need to find something else. You know, with my business hat on, the money coming in wasn't covering the money going out, and that's apparently not a good place to be in business. So we need to find something new. So, you know, we're obviously well known for essentially having digitized that whole process. Another interesting lesson from my perspective as a technologist is we massively over-engineered this. I mean, we literally tried to replicate the paper form. So do you remember you used to be sponsored per mile, you know, 10 pence a mile? So we had a whole mechanic around how long's the event and breaking it down into yards, miles. We also made it a pledge. So again, at the time, you remember you went around with the form, people pledged their money. Then you went around after the event and actually claimed the cash. So we had some really complex stuff happening with storing credit card details, and we gradually undone all of those things. In fact, I don't know if you've seen my profile. I left Just Giving for a while to do some other stuff and came back 2 years ago. And as I walked through the door, someone was very proud to tell me how much of our features they deleted since they joined the company. It's like, my net contribution to Wikipedia is negative as well. I keep deleting things. So moving forward to 2001, this gentleman on the right was coming into the public consciousness, and Baylor invested in the business, and we've never had any investment since. This is when he was a young man. He's now an octogenarian, but a fascinating character. He invented the CD-ROM, and you can see a few other things he did, but he invented the touchscreen as well. So very clever engineer. He's of Hungarian descendancy. He went to university at Dundee, Just a very inspirational character, and a board meeting with him is hard work. So we put our graph up on the chart that says growth, you know, an arrow going to the right. Sometimes it's a bit more hockey stick to sort of say where we're going to end up. And he says, no, this is limiting our consciousness. There are 7 billion people on Earth. 2 billion don't have enough to eat. 1 billion have excess. We need to redistribute the wealth. We're sat there looking at our graph going, yeah, okay, how do we bridge that? We complain about the difficulties of the growing pains of becoming a company that's 130 this year and last year was 90. And he says, well, I've got 15 billion cells in my body and they all get on fine. So it's to some people it's energizing. To our marketing director, it's very frustrating. And we changed, we played with the look and feel, we're trying to get a bit softer. You know, the propeller design that I've just been showing got replaced with this happy cartoony style. We also launched in the US about that time. Pressing through to 2006, we had some logo changes. I don't know why, I'm fascinated by how often we try to reinvent what we do or reinvent the story. This was to do with the US business was starting to do something different to the UK business. And it was actually a very challenging time. It's one of the reasons I came back. The US business started to become more about giving charities facilities for their website, which is kind of where we'd started, you know, Just Giving in the first place, whereas Just Giving was becoming a consumer offering. So way back at the beginning, just to recap, recap in terms of our proposition. The proposition was to say to charities, we will help you move from offline to online because we've invested the money in the facility, so you don't have to. You can kind of pay as you go. That's how this works. That was the early proposition. Then through the middle of the 2000s, it became more of a features and benefits sell. You know, the competitors moved into the space, 3 or 4. Scary at the time, but actually ultimately really energizing. When we were the only people doing what we were doing, we questioned our own sanity. It's like, why are we the only people doing this? Are we insane? Other people questioned our sanity too, not least of which my wife. that was when we weren't earning any money. But the features and benefits sale was essentially saying to charities, bring your supporters and we will help them raise money for you. Now, Just Giving 2 years ago with the American question, what do we do with the American business? It's different to the UK business. We needed to take a sense check on our sort of direction of travel. And we decided that we need to go to somewhere different to where we are now. We need to not say to charities, bring your supporters. We have 26 million users. So maybe we should just say to them, bring your causes, bring your stories. We have supporters. We want to try and connect you with supporters. So in charity terms, it's sort of a higher value proposition, even though it's the same fee structure as it always was. And so we need to be much more consumer facing. And the idea of, you probably know Just Giving well for, apologies by the way, for our users bombarding you with emails asking you for money. That's one I often get at the pub. We need to move beyond that to try and understand why do people give to charity at all? And it's way beyond sort of the usual domain of user experience. Those of you that work in any sort of kind of digital space or do any work with digital, you'll be aware of the user experience designers. This is more of a philosophical, pseudo-religious type question. Why do people give to charity? What is charity? Actually, charity, we tend to think of charity as the institutions that raise money for good causes. But actually, if you go back etymologically to the origin of the word, it's about love for your fellow man. It's love for mankind. I suppose faith, hope, and charity is actually saying faith, hope, and love. So how do you get that into a, you know, we want people to come. We want to understand why they want to give to charity. Now, the big thing that's on our side is, quick time chronology check. Steve Jobs, liver transplant, 2009. Another logo change, just for fun. This is the one you've already seen. Social is a major aspect. You know, people coming together around a cause to try and provide some relief or to try and find a solution. It's a very social activity. The good news for Just Giving is it's really hard to really understand people's motivations to give to different causes because there are so many. And it's full of pitfalls as well. We could easily tread on sort of taboo type areas and offend people. And so actually we use social media very heavily. We've even been described as the UK's original social media business. It's a bit strong. But in this lineup that you've already heard of, the different social media, some of the social media businesses, we're sort of wondering, and I'm saying wondering, because this is space we're exploring. We don't know, but this is what we're going to give. We're going to try this. We're wondering whether just giving is where you express your social conscience or where you explore your social conscience and work out how you can make a difference. And the way you do that, again, this word social, is people coming together. Now, we already have a lot of data about the users of the service, so let me try and explain. Obviously, with Just Giving, you have people that support charities by running in marathons. There's a lady today just down the coast in Dorset, I think she is, and she's spending 24 hours, this is being streamed live online, drawing dogs. And it's not all about marathons. She's an illustrator. She's drawing 1,000 dogs in 24 hours for charity. So people are creating fundraising pages. Then they're inviting their friends and family and colleagues to sponsor them. So this first graph represents a user at the center and then everybody that we know them to be connected to because they've either been sponsored by them or they have sponsored, you know, reciprocally, they've sponsored them. Moving on one more, we've added in the interactions between all of those other users as well. Moving on again, we've done some graph theory. It's like back to school for me, graph theory about 2 years ago. The colors denote different sort of social groupings around the individual. So we'd picked a name from random, and then we actually contacted them to validate whether this was correct. So top, I can't remember which is which, but I think sort of top left in red is probably their work colleagues. The green is maybe their friends, and the blue is probably their family or something. Can't remember what yellow was. Then what we did was, okay, there's probably, so there's where we know people know each other because they've sponsored each other. But actually we can do mathematics to infer who they might know. So that actually extends our understanding of people's networks. So what we want to be able to do is when you visit the website with a purpose in mind, you get to see what your network are doing for charity. You might get to see expressions of caring. So you know, to get some trainers on and run the marathon is that's quite a barrier to anyone entering to use our service. So we're introducing, like Facebook's like button, we're introducing a care button. So by showing you care, you can share that with your friends, and it creates a social mechanic. There's an endless debate at the company whether we are a social media company or whether we're sort of using the social media phenomenon in a different way. Don't know. Keep debating it. Steve mentioned no makeup selfie, so here was some of my colleagues. The resolution is not great, but this was them getting involved in the no makeup selfie. Because I just wanted to reflect on some of the numbers that you see through the systems. So just in the first 24 hours, again, Steve did mention it, but just in case you don't know, the concept was you tweet or on Facebook, use the hashtag no makeup selfie, you take a photo of yourself without makeup. Guys were encouraged to do it by wearing makeup, hence the chaps on the front there looking splendid. We were all just amazed by how social media and sort of the viral phenomenon led to 200,000 donations in just 24 hours. And off the back of that, 25,000 Facebook registrations. But this is where the graph theory of mathematics is amazing. This is how people coming together are so powerful. 25,000 Facebook registrations, that's 15 million connections. When we're talking about the group dynamics of our business, you know, as we grow, one thing I like to point out is if you have a team of three people, it's a triangle, and so there's three edges. There's three communications channels with three people. When you add a fourth person, you're not just adding one more to the group. You're not making the group 25% bigger. You're actually doubling its size. Because a triangle has three connections, a group of four has six. So you're going from a system with 3 communications channels to a system with 6 communications channels. It's twice as complicated to run a team of 4 as it is a team of 3, but it's powerful when it works. So just wanted to point out that social graph mechanic. Last slide. We are growing really fast, so we're about to move office to one that can handle 180. And I was in the office the other day, and we're at stretching point. We've practically got people sat on each other's laps to fit everyone in. And I went in, and on the draining board, someone had cleaned a plate, communal plate, and slapped this reserved post-it note on it. And I think, I don't know if that's passive-aggressive or what, but it's thought, leave you on that thought.